And welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and there's more important information coming up, so please keep that pencil and your recycled paper handy, because there's lots of stuff to write down. You too can be doing stuff. We're going to get right back into activist news here, because there's so darn much of it this week. Greenpeace activists from Japan, Canada, and the United States boarded the container ship MV Wanhee in Yokohama, Japan, demanding that the U.S. take responsibility for safe disposal of the toxic industrial chemical waste on board. The cargo consists of 14 containers full of polychlorinated biphenyls that were taken from U.S. military bases in Japan. Greenpeace condemned the U.S. government for trying to ship hazardous PCB waste into Canada after they were turned away at the USA. After boarding the ship, the team of four activists displayed a banner reading USA Toxic Criminal. The toxic PCB shipment on board the MV Wanhee is being returned to Japan after dock workers in Seattle refused to unload the cargo and environmentalists threatened a lawsuit. The military waste shipment left Seattle on April 7th and sailed to its next port of call, Vancouver, BC, with the waste containers still on board since the Canadian authorities had already refused the shipment. The MV Wanhee left Vancouver on April 9th for Japan. The waste will be reshipped to as yet an undisclosed location. The U.S. Department of Defense has made a mess by trying to secretly dispose of this waste. The shipment was not allowed into the U.S. or into Canada for incineration. It is irresponsible for them to send it back to Japan without a proposal for an environmentally acceptable solution for detoxification of the waste, said Matt Rutschel, toxic campaigner for Greenpeace International. Promising non-incineration technologies already exist and being used, for example, to clean up hazardous waste dumped at the 2000 Summer Olympic site at Homebush Bay in Sydney, Australia, according to Rutschel. And from London, we read that the executive director of the environmental campaign group Greenpeace, Lord Peter Melchett, was cleared along with 27 fellow campaigners of charges of stealing genetically modified crops, but the protesters may now face a trial on charges of criminal damage after a jury in Norwich Crown Court found them not guilty of theft, but failed to agree on a verdict of the criminal damage. The Crown Prosecution Service now has 2 weeks to decide whether to ask for the new trial. The campaigners were arrested after protests against genetically modified crops at a GM site at Ling in Norfolk, eastern England, in July of last year. Proponents of the genetically modified crops say the technology could help feed the developing world, cut food production costs, and reduce the need for pesticides, but Greenpeace and other detractors say the health risks of the fledgling technology are unclear and the environmental hazards potentially alarming. 34 new farm-scale trials of corn, beets, oilseed are all due to be planted around Britain this month, allowing independent scientists to make comparisons with traditional crops and assess any fallout on local plants and wildlife. Those trials are due to end in 2003 if they aren't dug up. The Austrian government has banned imports of Adventis's genetically modified corn on grounds that there are no available studies of the long-term impact the crop would have on the environment, and protesters have destroyed a genetically modified rapeseed field in France. Several hundred environmental campaigners destroyed the field as part of a public awareness campaign, according to the Green Party of France. And from Portland, Oregon, we read, despite the overwhelming popularity of protecting roadless areas and against the wishes of leading members of the Oregon's congressional delegation, regional forester Harv Fosgren announced he is committed to seeing the Eagle Creek watershed logged. In a meeting with forest protection advocates, the Northwest highest-ranking Forest Service official stated that logging and the controversial Eagle timber sales of the Mount Hood Forest would proceed this summer. While acknowledging that critics of the sale had raised large and substantive issues, the regional forester was nonetheless unwilling to cancel any portion of the planned logging. Conservationists have cited concerns about the long-term impacts of logging to the roadless characteristics of the area and the failure of the agency to comply with policies that the Northwest Forest Plan were designed to maintain or enhance watershed quality. Also from Oregon, Salem Bureau of Land Management has been cutting old growth. Some habits are harder to break than others, and I fear the BLM may need a 12-step program for breaking its addiction to logging old growth. After targeting the headwaters of Thomas Creek for clearcutting and releasing an illegal environmental assessment that attempted to avoid required surveys for rare species, the Salem BLM went ahead and logged 41 old growth trees despite losing the appeal. The felling was part of the 3P Fellbuck and Scale program, whereby the BLM cuts down old growth before they have completed the National Environmental Protection Agency documentation for the timber sale in order to give the potential purchasers more accurate cruise and appraisal data. In this case, the purchaser was Herbert Lumber, the same folks who just felled Rightview, despite the presence of tree sitters and Judge Rothstein's determination that the sale violated the aquatic conservation strategy. If you want more information, contact George at 541-349-9660. That's 541-349-9660 for more information. And if you'd like to talk to the state director in Oregon of the BLM, call Elaine Zielinski, 503-952-6002. Tell her what you think of logging. Elaine Zielinski, 503-952-6002. And here's an alert on grizzly bears. Endangered species proponents and anti-bear groups are mobilizing their grassroots to scuttle a new plan to reintroduce grizzly bears to the remote federal wilderness areas of western Montana and central Idaho. We need all of you to let the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service know that you support restoration of this threatened species. A century ago, grizzly bears dominated the forests and mountains of the American West, but due to habitat loss and unregulated killing today, only 1,000 bears survive in the lower 48 states. Here's what you can do. Let the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service know that you support grizzly bear recovery through the Citizen Management Plan. Please take a minute and send an email to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service supporting your grizzly bear restoration comments. Through the Citizen Management Plan, your comments must be received by April 24th. That's coming up real fast, folks. Here's how you do it. Go to the web, www.denaction, D-E-N-A-C-T-I-O-N, den, as in bear den, denaction.org, www.denaction.org, and they have everything you need to do to register your protest at that site. I read this, I didn't believe this. The Great Western ATV Way. A Utah-based all-terrain vehicle lobby is asking Congress to amend the National Trails Act to designate the Great Western Trail, a Mexico to Canada motorized recreation corridor that would convert quiet trails into ATV ways and ruin vast tracts of America's last wild desert canyons and mountains. What is the Great Western Trail? The Great Western Trail Association convinced Representative Jim Hansen of Utah to provide $300,000 to the U.S. Forest Service to conduct a three-year study of the feasibility of amending the National Scenic and Historic Trails Act to include a motorized recreation corridor between Canada and Mexico. This is a total bummer, folks. You've got to let folks know that you don't like this idea at all. You can go to the following webpage, wildmontana.org/gwt.htm. That's wildmontana.org/gwt.htm, and they have an automatic emailer at this site. Also, you must make your comments by April 28th on the web, or you still have time on this one. You got about a week. You can write to Roshanna Stone, Great Western Trail Feasibility Study, U.S. Forest Service, 2647 Kimberly Road East, Twin Falls, Idaho, 83301. Once again, that address for your comments on the Great Western ATV Trail, Roshanna Stone, Great Western Trail Feasibility Study, U.S. Forest Service, 2647 Kimberly Road East, Twin Falls, Idaho, 83301. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has announced it will hold a series of public meetings across the United States to discuss the concerns raised by increasing populations of double-crested cormorants and to solicit public comments on the potential management options as the service develops a nationwide strategy for managing the birds. And you better believe by management they mean killing double-crested cormorants, or at least preventing them from breeding and getting rid of as many of these birds as they can. Their crime? Well, they've managed to survive DDT and with a little bit of help from you and me, they've gotten a little bit more populous, and they're eating fish. Big deal. Anyway, if you want more information on this cormorant study, you can go to the Forest Service or Fish and Wildlife Service website, excuse me. It's at migratorybirds.fws.gov. That's migratorybirds, all one word, .fws.gov/issues/cormorant, cormorant.html. Once again, that webpage, migratorybirds.fws.gov/issues/cormorant/cormorant.html. There will also be public hearings. The first one's in Washington, D.C. on April 25th at the Department of Interior building at 10 a.m. Portland, Oregon, April 27th at the Red Lion Hotel Coliseum at 7 p.m. In Burlington, Vermont on May 9th at the Clarion Hotel and Convention Center at 7 p.m. Watertown, New York on May 10th at the Dulles State Office Building at 7 p.m. And in Syracuse, New York on May 11th at the Carousel Center Mall on the Skydeck 6th level at 7 p.m. There are other hearings, and I will announce those later on in future shows. And comments are needed on the Forest Service's long-term road management strategy. Uncle Dennis has talked about this one for quite a while. This one is going to keep roads out of our roadless areas all across the United States. It will let the Forest Service know that you want to road building, upgrading, and decommissioning and maintenance decisions should be put on an ecosystem basis. And the policy should provide specific but overarching direction to protect roadless values. And the policy should promote ecosystem restoration and sustainability. Where do you send your comments? Please do this soon. Your comments need to be filed by May 2nd. Here's the address, U.S. Forest Service, C-A-E-T, Attention Roads, P.O. Box 221090, Salt Lake City, Utah, 84122. Once again, that's U.S. Forest Service, C-A-E-T, Attention Roads, P.O. Box 221090, Salt Lake City, Utah, 84122. And if you want more information, you can go to the Forest Service website. That's at www.fs.fed.us/news/roads. www.fs.fed.us/news/roads. All right. And let's get into some animal news here. Mute swans, a species introduced from Europe and Asia, are expanding their population in the U.S. The Maryland Department of Natural Resources Waterfowl Program Manager Larry Hindman announced the results of the 1999 Aerial Mute Swan Survey. The total number of mute swans counted was 3,955. That's a 46% increase over the 1996 survey. The 1999 mute swan population included 594 breeding pairs, 2,715 non-breeders, and 646 young. The survey is conducted every 3 years along the Atlantic Flyway. Mute swans are large birds measuring about 6 feet in length. They are quite aggressive, displacing native waterfowl and other bird species, and they sometimes attack humans. Early in the 1990s, a large molting flock of more than 600 mute swans caused a colony of least terns and black skimmers to abandon their nesting site on Barren Island in Dorchester County, Maryland. These swans also displaced nesting foresters and common terns, declining species in Maryland. In other areas of the state, mute swans have also been documented killing mallard ducklings and Canadian goose goslings. Mute swans have also been observed exhibiting aggression toward tundra swans, a declining native species. The mute swans feed on submerged aquatic vegetation like widgeon grass and redhead grass, reducing its availability to native wildlife. In some areas, loss of Chesapeake Bay grasses to mute swans has been severe. The Department of Natural Resources has appointed a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify public concerns over mute swans and suggest strategies related to their management. Basically, how to get rid of the damn swans. Anyway, you folks in Maryland, wake up. In this study from Berkeley, California, the Earth needs on the average about 10 million years to recover from a mass extinction of the planet's species. far longer than most scientists had thought, according to a new study by scientists at the University of California, Berkeley, and Duke University. Moreover, the recovery time is the same whether the global die-off involves the loss of most life on Earth or wipes out far fewer species. The finding has implications for the Earth's fate as human activity threatens species around the globe. People have argued that we only have to worry about human-caused extinctions if we do something that causes the loss of 80 or 90% of the species on the planet, said UC Berkeley environmental scientist James Kirchner. Our analysis shows that even if the human impact is much smaller, like 20 or 30 or even 50% of the species, it's still going to take 10 million years for the Earth to recover. That is well past the expected lifespan of the human species, or even of the genus Homo. And Colorado's Canadian lynx population has more than doubled as Colorado Division of Wildlife biologists released 33 of the cats into the San Juan Mountains in early April. According to division biologist Dave Kenman, 23 lynx were released at three separate sites in west of Creed, and another 10 were released at three sites near Pagosa Springs in Silverton. All went well, Kenman said. They are all in excellent condition, and we were able to get them to the release sites we wanted. Kenman said that several of the males were released in areas where female lynx have established territories to increase chances they will breed this spring. Others were released in groups of males and females where there is a healthy snowshoe hare population, which is the lynx's main food source. And forest guardians, represented by the Earth Justice Legal Defense Fund, have filed suit to halt overgrazing on 8 cattle allotments covering more than 300,000 acres of the Lincoln National Forest in New Mexico. The U.S. Forest Service monitoring information reveals that cattle are consuming up to 92% of the forage on certain allotments when the allowable use standard is only 35%. The suit alleges that continued overgrazing degrades streams and harms endangered wildlife in violation of the Endangered Species Act and the National Forest Management Act. The Forest Service is ignoring their own scientific data, which shows these areas are horribly overgrazed by cattle, and actions has forced this issue into the courts, said Marie Kirk, an attorney with the Earth Justice Legal Defense Fund. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has denied a petition by California business and agricultural interests to remove two vernal pool animals from the federal list of threatened and endangered species. The threatened vernal pool fairy shrimp and the endangered vernal pool tadpole shrimp are tiny freshwater crustaceans living in seasonal wetlands, mostly in northern and central California. Under the Endangered Species Act, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service may delist a species only if the best scientific and commercial data available substantiate that it is neither endangered nor threatened. Delisting may be warranted as a result of extinction or recovery of the species or by determination that the original data used for classification of the species were in error. What's really going on here? These folks want to put a campus of the University of California out near Merced. And guess what is out in the field where they have plans for this large campus? You got it. Vernal pool fairy shrimp and endangered vernal pool tadpole shrimp. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has listed the northern Idaho ground squirrel as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. The northern Idaho ground squirrel, found only in Idaho, has the smallest geographic range of any squirrel species and one of the smallest ranges of all North American mammals. The entire range covers an area only 18 by 20 miles on public and private lands. Its historic range may have been much larger, but the northern Idaho ground squirrel has lived in Idaho since before the Pleistocene era, nearly 2 million years ago. But in recent years, loss of habitat has caused a sharp population decline, said Ann Badgley, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Pacific Regional Director. Fire suppression is the primary reason for the loss of habitat because it allows forests to encroach into the meadows where the species lives, but other threats include land conversion for agricultural and residential development and the loss of open corridors between remaining populations. The northern Idaho ground squirrel lives in rocky, dry meadows surrounded by forests of ponderosa pine or Douglas fir at elevations of 3,800 feet to 5,200 feet. It eats grass seeds and other leafy green vegetation and needs large quantities of these food sources to store body energy for the 8 months it spends underground from August through March. By 1998, fewer than 1,000 squirrels were found. And urban hawks are being electrocuted on power poles by the thousands, and electric utilities are not taking steps to prevent it, says the Center for Biological Diversity. The center will present a panel I guess that has already happened. But anyway, Tucson and Phoenix, Arizona have some of the densest urban raptor populations in North America. Large raptors such as Harris's hawk and the great horned owls are often electrocuted as they perch on utility poles without sufficient design protections or insulation. Since Harris's hawks roost communally, an entire family can be electrocuted together. Young birds are most often killed because older, larger birds occupy the higher roosting positions, forcing the smaller birds to perch down among the cable connections. Under pressure from environmentalists, Tucson Electric Power has taken some steps to insulate up to 4% of its poles, but has chosen to use the cheapest system available, even though it is less than effective. And the Center for Biological Diversity and a coalition of environmental groups plan to sue the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service over the agency's refusal to consider listing the yellow-billed cuckoo as an endangered species throughout the North American continent. The cuckoo has been extirpated from most of western North America, where it once occurred from southern British Columbia to northern Mexico. Its western strongholds are now in Arizona and Mexico. Populations east of the continental divide have been crashing since the 1960s at an increasing rate since the 1980s. East of the continental divide, the cuckoo ranges from southern Canada to Florida, but is declining in the northern portion of its range. Its remaining eastern strongholds are in the southeastern states. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has issued a positive initial finding on the center's petition to list the cuckoo as an endangered species west of the continental divide, but has refused to consider listing the species in eastern North America. It apparently wants to wait until the cuckoo is nearly unrecoverable in the east before taking action, the center said. And the National Audubon Society, Defenders of Wildlife, the Seattle Audubon Society, and the American Bird Conservancy filed suit in federal district court against the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in an effort to save the largest breeding colony of Caspian terns in North America. The suit asked the federal court to prevent the Corps from destroying tern breeding habitat, harassment of nesting terns, and destroying up to 300 tern eggs on Rice Island in the Upper Columbia River until the agency prepares an environmental impact statement. The Corps has proposed relocating the colony to prevent the terns from feeding on threatened and endangered salmon. The terns are being used as an excuse for those who do not want to make the tough choices on saving the salmon, said Daniel Beard, National Audubon Society Senior Vice President. You can see the birds flying around. You don't see poor water quality or habitat loss. And moving the terns will do little to increase the salmon in the Pacific Northwest, said Defenders of Wildlife President Roger Slickeisen. Although the tern colony has grown in the past few years, salmon returns last year were the highest in two decades. Clearly, the terns are not the major factor affecting salmon. Protecting imperiled cave-dwelling species requires conserving not only the cave but the land above it, suggests new research presented in the Journal of Conservation Biology. The U.S. has more cave-dwelling species than any country worldwide, almost 1,000 documented species, but 95% of those species are threatened or endangered. Almost all cave species are vulnerable to disruptions of the vegetation and drainage basins of the overlying surface, according to David Culver of the Department of Biology of the American University. For example, deforestation around caves can decrease rat and bat populations, reducing the dung that many cave species depend on. Dung dwellers account for an estimated 40% of the U.S. species that live in caves. Waterborne contaminants, another problem for cave species, can persist for months in cave ecosystems. Cave streams in West Virginia's agricultural areas have elevated levels of nitrates and pesticides, and other sources of subterranean water contamination include accidental spills, gasoline storage tank leaks, and illegal dumping into sinkholes. Crustaceans, insects, and arachnids comprise the majority of cave species, and most are eyeless and lacking pigment. Several thousand caves in the continental U.S. are concentrated in the 20% of the land that is covered by limestone. Culver found that cave species are concentrated even further. More than 60% are found only in caves in a single county or a single cave. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have. To get news or announcements from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email. We're at cruzief@cruzio.com. That's cruzief@cruzio.com. Or you can send letters to Earth First Radio at Post Office Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Once again, that's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Be sure to send those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. If you want more in-depth news or information about the Earth First movement, please subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Their address, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. And you can listen to the Earth First Radio on your computer on the World Wide Web at radioforall.net. That's www.radio4all.net. earthfirstradio.net. You'll need a sound card, but the software you need is free on the website. Earth First Radio is carried on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. Please ask your local station to rebroadcast Earth First Radio, just like WXXE in Syracuse, New York. Earth First Radio is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Portions of this newscast were prepared with the help of Eon Blues. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis, and I want to thank you for listening to Earth First Radio. And now we're going to listen to some music by a gentleman by the name of Robert Hoyt. This one's called Enough.
Early this AM, I stumbled out of bed. Stayed up too long, worrying about being dead. Showed up late at the place where I'm employed. Mumbled something about the traffic. And the boss just looked annoyed. Lunchtime outside felt the sun upon my face, but it reminded me of another time and place. Heard the birds sing, music in the air. Then I felt something drop into my hair. My heart sinks, it gets better. I'll get up to leave. My head spins, it gets just too full stuff. Sometimes you just gotta say enough. Yeah, enough. Oh, enough. Oh, yes, enough. Saving the world can be so hard to do when no one else cares, at least not as much as you. A few precious moments, a few things to share, but it costs me a lot of stress, cause it's such a mess and we're not getting anywhere. My heart sings, it gets battered on my sleeve, and my senses all get up to leave. My head spins, it gets just too full of. Sometimes you just gotta say enough. Yeah, enough. Well, what's enough? I'll tell you what's enough. It's enough time, enough sleep, enough benefits to reap, enough money, enough love, enough of anything you can think of, enough power, enough brains, enough patience and enough pains, enough ignorance, enough bliss, enough of that and enough of this. My heart sings, it gets battered on my sleeve, and my senses all get up to leave. It's just too full stuff. Sometimes you just gotta say enough. Yeah, enough. Oh, enough. Oh, yes, enough. Ooh, enough, 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 enough,